you're outside, you might think it's a little bit warm. I know we're getting into March now and it feels like, oh man, you barely need the doona, and it seems like maybe it's warmer than it should be. And new research suggests that our summers are getting longer and longer, and we're lucky enough to be joined by Richie Merzian, the Director of Climate and Energy Programming at the Australian Institute, to discuss. Richie, how's it going?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, obviously, it's saying that our summers are going longer and longer, and some people might just say, listen, sounds all right to me, a couple more beach days each year, but tell us about why this matters.
Yeah, it does sound ideal, but I guess if you look at what the last summer's been, it's not, there's nothing idyllic about it. It's getting hotter, it's getting longer, and with that comes more bushfires, comes a whole bunch of consequences. But what we did to figure this out is we looked at what the average temperatures were for summers in the 1950s and 1960s. So what were the average temperatures when they started on the 1st of December and when they finished at the end of February? And we compared it to the last 20 years. And what we found is that summers as we knew it are now starting earlier, they're finishing later, and on average across Australia, they're going for an additional 31 days or about a month.
Right. What's, in reflection of those bushfires, was there like a direct correlation between kind of the findings that you've had and maybe the areas that were hit particularly hard?
Well, this was sort of across the board. We looked at 70 different weather stations, and basically the trend was quite clear. In some places it was more pronounced. In some places it was more like, you know, 7 weeks of additional summer, like in places like Port Macquarie. And in Port Macquarie, we all know they had a really bad fire season, devastating over summer. Mm. But a lot of that devastation is actually outside the traditional December to February period. And that kind of correlates with our analysis, which finds that summer, as we know it, is much larger. The bushfire season is much larger and longer. And also all these other consequences that come with it. So if we think about, like, say, extreme heat and heat waves, like whenever there's a heat wave warning, you see like a picture of people lounging by the beach.
Right.
But extreme heat is actually like the largest killer of Australians. In fact, it's killed more Australians than all other natural hazards put together. So it really does change how you think about climate change.
Yeah, is there fears? Because like obviously kind of every time we do have those heat waves, they especially say, listen, look after the elderly. It can have quite a severe impact on them. Like, is that like a real fear, or is it a potential kind of major issue going forward in the next couple of years? And maybe what are some other impacts, like really scary stuff that we can probably expect?
Yeah, look, the impact is particularly harsh on elderly Australians. As I said, like extreme heat has the highest fatality rate, higher than all other natural hazards put together. And part of that is the impact. So because it's so hot, everyone's blasting their aircon, so you're more likely to have these huge electricity spikes in terms of demand. But then it also all our coal and gas-fired infrastructure are less efficient under extreme heat. So you have our generation that is providing less than it could, and you have our demand, which is higher than it usually is.
Right.
So it's these things compounding on each other. And when that breaks, when you do have these blackouts or these power downs, then that puts people, especially older people, in a really precarious position.
That is interesting that you say it's almost like self-perpetuating issue, because if we demand more energy in times of kind of high heat or whatever it is, and then of course that the more energy that we're using, that's just going to have more kind of effect on the climate, as we've seen kind of over the last kind of decades and all that kind of stuff, and to hit a point that we are now with the climate.
Exactly. And part of the solution actually ticks many boxes. If we shift to renewable energy, solar works best when it's hottest. So it kind of really works hand in hand. I mean, it's safe to say those who have solar panels on their roofs usually do quite well during these extreme heat scenarios, because they can switch to their own systems.
Right.
In fact, if they have a battery and they have ample energy, then they help by providing more energy back into the grid to help those who don't. So we've seen rooftop solar actually playing both these roles, allowing more people to become independent, but also helping the grid more broadly deal with these spikes.
So outside of kind of using solar panels or anything, what are some, both as individuals and as a country, what are some kind of actual viable things that we can do right now to try to kind of mitigate this? Because obviously, and we've seen this with the bushfires, one of the most frustrating things about kind of climate change or just heat waves in general is that we can feel powerless, and it is a really scary issue when you're confronted with it.
Totally. And the worst thing to do is to go from that position into straight into despair.
Right.
Because it's not. Like, the climate change is the challenge for for all generations right now, and there's a lot of things that you can do individually. So if you don't have panels, switch to green power. If you can't do that, then look at other ways. Switch your transport if you can. If you can't afford it, buy an electric vehicle. You use more public transport, use your bike more. Look at where you do your banking. Who do you have your mortgage with? Do they invest in fossil fuel projects that are only fueling the climate crisis?
Wow.
Who do you have your super with? You know?
That's such an angle. I think like for most people, at least it's not to the top of mind for me. I can't imagine for most people it's top of mind. So it's interesting. It's almost as if, and I'm sure you probably agree, there's pretty much every facet of your life can have a direct impact or indirect impact on the climate. And we can make changes pretty much in every facet.
That's right. And look, there's lots of individual action we can do. So I'm never sort of like, I'm always prone to just point people in that direction. But the single biggest thing you can do though is basically get politically active. Because ultimately you can make individual change, but it's going to be that national and that international change that's going to have that big outcome. And so right now the Australian government has a target that aligns itself with a 3 to 4 degree world. So that's 3 to 4 times the kind of heating that we've already experienced right now. Do we want that? Like, do we want all the consequences that come with that? Or do we want the government to take on a more ambitious target? They'll say, you know, and this is the logic, oh, but we want a balanced response that doesn't hurt the economy. But the cost of inaction is 20 times, at least 20 times more than the cost of action, according to the University of Melbourne's Professor Tom Compass under his recent modelling. So if you put it like that, it makes the equation a lot simpler.
Mm.
The government should be doing more, and more importantly, it should be lobbying other countries, and it needs to do that from a place of credibility. So stop trying to use these dodgy carryover credits that you accumulated from the last climate agreement. They're using them like as if they get out of jail free cards, but they're not. Ultimately, that's a debt that we owe to the atmosphere. That's heating that's banked in already. Australia needs to reduce its emissions going forward, not use these dodgy credits. It needs to stop exporting fossil fuels. Australia's the largest fossil fuel exporter in the developed world, and we're the third largest globally after Russia and Saudi. So
right.
Australia has a number of tools it can play in terms of leveraging and influencing climate action globally.
In saying that, obviously kind of what we see in the media, and it's perpetuated by a lot of Australians' politics, and you've only got to go on Facebook for about 5 minutes to see that there's always, every time you bring up the discussion around climate, there's going to be kind of denialism kind of, and it seems to be super, super strong. It seems to be almost everything that you read. So did your findings kind of, were they met with any criticism, and was there kind of any backlash? And if so, what did they have to say, or what do you have to say in response?
Yeah, actually, no one's come out and said this is rubbish, because all we've done is we've taken hard data from 70 different weather stations. It's been averaged out over 20-year periods to take into account El Niños and a number of other cyclical, you know, events. And so because it's not, we're not projecting anything, we're just presenting hard data. The Bureau has done it. It stands by it. It's credible. It's taken directly from these stations. All we're doing is we're applying it to change how people culturally think about summer, not just in terms of the scientific analysis of our temperatures, but also our cultural understanding of what it means to be summer. That idyllic time with family and friends by the beach, that is being replaced with a far more harsher, extreme climate and summer that comes with it. And do we want more of this? And if not, what can we do to make the change that we want?
That's good stuff. It's nice to hear that sometimes people actually listen to the facts. Like if the writing's on the wall, sometimes you just can't help but read it. Hey, Richie, thanks so much for joining us. I know you've got to be somewhere in about 1 minute, so we really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Right. Have a good day.
Cheers.
That was Richie Merzian, the Director of Climate and Energy Programming at the Australian Institute, talking about how Aussie summers are getting longer and longer and longer due to some climate change and what effects that might have on the average Australian.